Michael Monroney joins the show now. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Luke. Thanks so much for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. The play Constellations is what's coming up next at Thunder River Theater, and one critic says about Constellations that it's about free will and friendship. It's also about quantum multiverse theory, love, and honey. Can you connect those dots for me and tell me what
wow.
exactly he means?
That's actually, you know, that's a pretty good distillation of what the play's about. And I read another review, and I don't remember what the newspaper was, but it said somehow Constellations finds a way to make quantum physics and string theory sexy. And
wow.
it's true.
Huh.
So, all right, so let's run through that. So the play's about two people. And one of them is a quantum physicist, and the other is a beekeeper. So there's your honey.
Okay.
Quantum mechanics is the study going in smaller and smaller, smaller atoms, molecules, quarks. Quarks is astrophysics. Sorry. The mythical Higgs boson and this new thing called string theory. And then we've got relativity, which is Einsteinian physics, which deals with everything big and out there, galaxies, planetary systems, the universe on a big scale. And the problem in physics is that there's one theory that works for relativity, and then there's another theory that works for quantum mechanics, but they don't work together. And that all these basic forces don't necessarily work the same in terms of the large scale and the small scale. So somebody came up with this thing called string theory, which sort of, guesses that maybe there's this little one-dimensional thing called a string that's the smallest building block and is probably comprised of energy, but we don't know if it's a wave or a particle theory, and that's at the basics of all physics. And these string theories actually, if they're true, tie the quantum and the larger universe together. So that's like the golden fleece, the holy grail of physics. So it doesn't really sound like something that would be very interesting as a subject of a play, does it?
No, au contraire, my friend.
So, yeah, the playwright is a genius. Nick Payne is a young British playwright. The play was first produced in Britain in 2012, and then it was on Broadway a couple of years later with Jake Gyllenhaal and an actress named Ruth Wilson. And it's amazing. Basically, in 75 minutes and in 50 scenes, the play presents everything that might have been and might never have been between the relationship of these two people.
Huh.
Because string theory in the multiverse says that time isn't asymmetrical as we think of it, with a beginning and an end, but that it's symmetrical, and everything that exists exists at the same time. And that way, if that's true, then every time we've made a decision, there may be another universe that exists where we made the opposite decision. It's heady stuff that nobody actually really totally understands any of it. So that's part of the fun part of it.
Well, how does the playwright embody those apparently contradictory notions? How does he do that?
Well, so there are in essence, I call them threats. It's sort of as an homage to the fact that we're dealing at the most basic level with string theory. And there are, depending on how you look on it, 8 or 9 different plot threads throughout the course of this play. And they are all the different permutations, the possibilities of what happens when these two people, two unlikely people in terms of forming a relationship, meet and either fall in love, don't fall in love, get married, don't get married, hate each other, don't hate each other, break up, don't break up. One of them gets cancer, one doesn't get cancer. It's all these different possible permutations and, sort of hypothesizes what happens if these actually all exist at the same time. And it's fascinating, and I don't want to scare anybody away with the physics, because while that's kind of fun and that's kind of the glue that holds it all together, what truly is amazing is how we grow to care for these two people and all the different versions of themselves and their different personalities that, at least within the play, all exist at the same time.
Wow. So does one thread set up another thread, or is it entirely a different direction?
They do set it up, and there's actually a very interesting sort of interior thread within the play, and it's actually one of the more serious threads, and the only way it's differentiated in the script is that it's in italics. So every 5 or 6 scenes, there'll be a scene in the script that's in italics, and during the course of the play, they actually go backwards, which doesn't necessarily make it any easier to understand.
Or talk about.
They're all within the same reality.
Huh.
So you get these 7 or 8 scenes within this one particular thread that they go backwards and sort of separate the other threads. And then towards the end of the play, we actually get them all in the same order. And it's one of the darker threads, the more serious threads of the play. But we actually get to see it then, having seen it all in reverse, presented in order, back-to-back, in the longest scene in the play, and it's toward the end of the play, it maybe helps tie everything together.
Wow, that's interesting. So
it's really fascinating.
So you don't get from point A to point B, you go from point A to point everything else, sort of.
You go from point A to point Q to point L to point D to point Z to point C, and yet it worked. Because of the dynamic that's created between these two extremely different but also extremely likable people. And I've got two really incredible performers. I've got Nikki Boxer, who's a longtime friend, and I've been very fortunate to direct her in 3 other shows, and we performed on stage together. She's playing Marianne. Marianne is the quantum physicist. And then I've got a young man named Niall Tenning, who grew up in the Valley and then moved to Chicago, and now he's moved back with his family. And he plays Roland, who is the beekeeper. And they meet, depending on who you believe, at either a wedding or a barbecue, and they either do or don't form a relationship.
That sounds like a rather daunting challenge for an actor, because I'm assuming that one particular part of a thread, as seen on stage, and then it zaps off to another part of the thread, and they have to do that. They have to turn on a dime and project very subtle changes, I'm sort of guessing. Is that right?
That's it in a nutshell. That's it in a nutshell. They, first of all, the two actors are on stage from the time the lights come up till the time the lights go out. So it's about a 75-minute play. It's a relatively short play with no intermission. But imagine, all right, so it's a 75-minute play with two people. That means that each person basically has to memorize 37 and a half minutes of dialogue all by themselves. And they never leave the stage. And as you said, as we go from thread to thread and jumping around, in our at least contemporary sense of time, they are very different characters. If we're allowing for the fact that these different relationships that we're seeing actually exist side by side within the multiverse, any minor deviation in our own, sort of life thread early on can produce an entirely different us, an entirely different me, an entirely different you somewhere down the line. So they aren't there. While the character may have the same name within the context of the play, they are very subtly differentiated between scene to scene.
How did you, as a director, help those actors face that challenge? How did you do that?
Well, we've been in rehearsal for about 6 weeks.
Okay.
I actually didn't pick this play. The play had been selected, and it came to be that they needed a director, and I read the script and I was sold. So I did quite a bit of research on the science theory, and I was very lucky to cast these two, talented actors in it, and we just explored. One of the things we did, and I think this was sort of the key, at least for us, to put it together, is we started learning the thread I described that is, serious and actually consecutive and you know, it's the longest scene in the play later in the play. We learned that first. We rehearsed it. We learned that first. So we knew where we were, and we could sort of aim all the other threads towards that one, because remember, we break that one down and do it in reverse. So that's sort of the spine of the play, and everything else sort of attaches to that spine at different points through the play. So we just explored and we improvised a lot, or we just, you know, I didn't give them things to do. We just played with the lines and played with the characters and tried to find the subtle distinctions between each thread. And it's exhausting for them. They have to be totally focused the entire time. And the lines sometimes side by side in these different scenes are almost identical, but not quite identical. As we mentioned, the scenes take very different turns as you go along, so they have to keep these 50 different scenes very distinct and separate in their memory banks. It's quite a thing to watch, and it was quite a thing to put together.
I imagine so. I mean, you know, I think of the traditional way of an actor approaching a character is maybe to conjure a backstory in their minds.
Right.
But that's not what's operable in this particular play, it doesn't sound like.
Well, it's operable to a point. We can certainly create, you know, a certain backstory up to the point where they first meet, which is in the first lines of the show. And it's interesting that Marianne is the first one to speak, and in her first line, she brings up the concept of immortality, which doesn't seem like a very good icebreaker for two people who are just meeting, but it's actually in a rather humorous presented in a rather humorous way. And so up to that point, the backstory is sort of consistent, and then everything else that happens in the play creates the backstory for each scene that happens from then on.
Oh, I see.
So there is, you know, you can chart the play. We could cut those 50 scenes up into separate pages of paper, and then you could actually put those as a timeline up on the wall with some degree of accuracy and sort of imagine what the path of each variation their personalities produces throughout the show.
I watched several videos, snippets of the performance of this play, both on the West End and on Broadway with Jake Gyllenhaal and Ruth.
Yeah.
Pardon me. And it seemed like the set design and the lighting vastly contributed to this idea of multiverses. There was one, for instance, where they had a bunch of balloons hanging from the ceiling with strings hanging down, sort of conjuring string theory, I guess, was
right.
The idea. Another one I watched had a lot of lights that were randomly or apparently randomly placed in the foreground and the background. I'm wondering how you approach that challenge with this play in Thunder River's production of this.
Well, so in our production, and you know, we're blessed with an incredibly creative and talented design team, but Sean Jeffries, who's the technical director, and I had a meeting early on, and one of the things, and I know this is something they really worked on in the English production, was, you know, planetary bodies, subatomic bodies, all these different particles relate to each other in certain ways. And in often, you know, the way they orbit each other is a very important part about their energy and the way they react to each other physically. So I decided that I wanted to do this show in the round. So we put it in the round. The stage is actually a circle. It's a 16-foot in diameter, 6-inch high disc on the floor. And Sean found a photograph, a deep space photograph from Hubble of, you know, something far, far off in the cosmos, and that's on the floor of the stage. And we do have quite a few lights, and there's some lights on the stage, but it's very simple. We have two basically simple sort of amorphous benches on the stage. That's it in terms of furniture. And the you know, a standard play that's presented in the round, like when I directed The Lion in Winter a couple of years ago, you have audience on four sides. And an idea that Thunderbird's been playing around with for a while was to do in the round on three sides. And I like that sort of triangular shape in context with the sphere of the stage. So we've got three different sets of of seats on three, you know, basically in the shape at triangle points around the stage. So it's a unique configuration that neither I nor Thunder River have ever used before.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah, it is interesting. So what the what one of the consequences of that is often, as in with any production around, you have actors with their backs to certain parts of the audience. So one of the challenges is varying the action, you know, enough so that each audience is rewarded at one point or another with getting to see, you know, the actors from the front.
Huh.
And, you know, you hopefully have at least one of the actors facing any particular part of the stage, or at least visible from any part of the stage at any particular time. But it's a challenging, it's almost a geometric puzzle in a way, to provide, you know, something worth watching to each section of the audience at all times.
I'm wondering about the transition from one thread to another as far as staging goes. Did you have the actors duck behind a curtain and come back out, or did you turn
no.
the lights off, or what did you
no,
do?
There's a sound cue that signifies the transition. So there's actually two different kinds of transitions. There are the transitions of all the different scenes in any given thread. Let's say, you know, just as a rough estimate, that there are six scenes in any thread. So there's a transition that happens, and it's a sound and light transition. And the actors just go boom, boom, boom from one scene to the other, and they have to make that transition almost instantaneously from whatever the mood of the scene is to the next one.
Like
scenes
I said,
vary in length anywhere from two lines to seven pages.
Wow.
So that's the variety within it.
Wow. Well, like I said before, daunting. That's a daunting
thing.
And
yet so incredibly rewarding. And to have, you know, actors that you trust and that put their trust in you. And, you know, it's one of the great joys of the Thunder River Theater Company is not only do we do, you know, some of the most important plays in the theatrical canon from the last 1,000 or more years, you know, going all the way back to the Greeks, but that they have the option of picking cutting-edge theater as well. This season has been really interesting with, you know, Dead Man's Cell Phone was the previous show, and that's certainly outside the mainstream, and this show is certainly out the mainstream, and then the next show is an Arthur Miller play. So we go back to something, you know, that's considered part of the established canon of the theater. So it's one of the unique things about Thunder River Theater Company and the scope and the shape of the actual interior space of the theater is that you can adapt it to almost anything. It's sort of a classic black box theater that is infinitely variable.
Michael, I read several synopses of this play, and I also I also read 8 or 10 reviews of it, and a lot of them made mention of a great crashing crescendo of emotion at the end, but nobody spoiled it. And I certainly don't mean to tease a spoiler out of you here and now, so to speak. But I wonder what that is. Is it related? Is there sort of an overarching theme besides this idea of multiverses?
There is, and we've touched on it. I'll say the first part of it is, you know, one of the great things about the creative arts is that you get to play with what if. What if this? What if that? And if that, then what if? And there's a huge amount of, you know, what if? What if there are an infinite number of universes that exist side by side? And what if there are an infinite number of each one of us living out our separate and very different lives in those threads? So that's certainly one of the underpinnings. But the crescendo you're talking about, and I won't get specific, but one of the characters delves into this notion of we perceive time as being asymmetrical, and I mentioned that. So it's got a beginning and an end. It's different on one end than it is on the other. But what indeed, if time is absolutely symmetrical, that time basically on a subatomic level does not exist? And if that's true, that means that, you know, all the time that we ever have and ever will have and ever had actually all exists all at the same time. And that, in a way, that ties in. You mentioned earlier one of the things that we haven't touched on yet was, is there free will or not, or is everything we do absolutely predetermined and out there somewhere in the universe. So I'll leave it at that in terms of the crux of the question.
It sounds to me like the setup also is perhaps, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you know how we often lament we never have time. Well, I don't have time to do what I want to do. But the truth is we have all the time in the world, and not just this world, but every other world too.
Right. Wow. Right. Now, that's a really good point.
Holy
cow. The argument is, you know, if everything we ever do exists somewhere, then what's the point of ever making a decision? Because it exists somewhere else. And I think, you know, maybe the great existential hinge that's all built on is it's whatever we make of it. It's whatever we choose, you know, to make it mean. That's an interesting thought, too.
Huh. So the free will comes in making that choice. You either make it or you don't.
Right.
Interesting. Wow. Huh. There's a lot involved with this one, isn't there, Mike Monroe?
There really is.
Holy
and,
God.
You know, it's, I would hate for the implication of the complexity of the science to scare people away, because at its most basic and intrinsic level, it's the story of two people and their search for love. And isn't that basically sort of at the heart of any great work of literature or of the theater or, you know, cinema?
In this universe or any other.
Or any other, correct.